In Parsha Noach, it starts off, we all know, Ela told us Noach, Noach, he's tzaddik. Tell me how you be doing, says the whole king, Noach, Noach, right? These are the generations of Noach. Noach was a man that was a tzaddik. Tzaddik Tom, a perfect tzaddik. So he was in his generations, the Elohim Yisrael. No, he went with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, it says that the world was destroyed in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and was filled with chamas. Rashi says, referring to robbery. Hashchasa tishachis, Rashi says, Lashon Erva v'Avodah Zarah, referring to those. Now, that's a Gemara. Avodah Zarah Chaf Gimel Avodah says, Ein Hashchasa Ela Lashon Erva v'Lashon Avodah Zarah. It's referring to them doing, being over on Arayas, referring to Avodah Zarah. Now, Lifnei Elohim makes sense in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is if they're denying the existence of God, because they believed in Avodah Zarah instead. They didn't believe there's HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and they started doing things that were terrible. So obviously that's the line of Lifnei Elohim. They were kofar in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Sota Daf Mem Tes, toward the very, very end, says that Znus, if a person is over on Znus, what that does to the world is it causes hunger and destruction. The purpose behind that, and the reason why it's connected, is because it happens to be, you have two eyes, you have two nostrils, you have two ears, but you only have one mouth. That mouth, according to the Maharal, connects with another mouth, and it connects with a part of our body, obviously, that's down there, that refers to that if a person has a tremendous appetite, then he also has a tremendous appetite for znus, and vice versa. That if znus is rampant, then that means that as well, that means you're going to have a rub, there's going to be hunger. So there's a connection between those two things, and that's the double amount. And that means there was destruction of all the grains, which means, at the time, says the Nativ, every single part of the world had lost some of the food that they had. The point of that was for everybody to do tshuva, that you were hungry, so you would dive into a Kaddish Baruch, you say to a Kaddish Baruch, give us food, we need food, and then everything would take. But instead, it made people start stealing from one another. Because we know what happens when there's a lack of food, when people don't have enough. They start taking away from somebody else that they can have from those people. That's the idea. That's the connection that happened, that because the Tisha Chetz Ha'aretz Lifnei Elohim, because the land became destroyed, because of the Avodah Zarah and Gilui Arayos that were over, there became a rub, there became some type of a hunger. That hunger led them to then have something called chamas, which was robbery from one another. That was, it's human nature. That's exactly what happens by human nature. That's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu decided that something had to change, because it got worse and worse and worse. The more they started stealing from one another, the more they were over on Znus, and they didn't really care about the Rav, which caused the Rav to get even worse, which caused the grain to become even worse than that, which meant that the ground was getting very, very dry, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu wasn't bringing down rain, and the grains were getting, you know, I guess a bad type of species of grain that was out there, till the entire nature of the land changed, to which HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, there's no natural way for me to heal this ground. The only way I can do it is to start over, literally, by taking this ground that's here and overturning it and bringing up ground that's all the way down, by raining it down in that way. That's the only way for anything to happen. So he created a Mabul. The Mabul was in order to change the world entirely. After the Mabul, HaKadosh Baruch Hu realized that tshuva cannot be expected when this rub happens. The world is affected too badly by it, so he made sure that that didn't happen ever again. That from now on, the world would not be as badly affected. That's the Nitziv's line. The suggestion given to Noah, according to the Chiddush Arim. I'm sorry?
How did you do that?
That was the new decision after Noah. That was the bris that he gave to Noah, that the world would not be adversely affected by Znus the same way that it was. That was the new idea. The Chiddush Arim says that the suggestion given to Noah was to build a teva. We all know that, right? But the Chiddush Arim says it a different type of a way. It wasn't just a teva, a boat. There's a remez here for us today. How do you get away from the Znus that's rampant throughout the world? The Hasidim say it, but the Chiddush Arim says that he's one of the original ones. You can save yourself through the tevos, through the words of the Torah and davening that we have every single day. If you learn and you daven well and you do the right things, then you'll be able to put yourself in the words. That's the idea of putting yourself in the teva. You'll be able to get yourself inside that teva, and you can save yourself that way. That's bol teva. Come to the teva means be davuk, make yourself stuck, and prepare yourself to enter within different worlds when you're davening and when you're learning. Then the mela, you're so stuck to it that you can't get yourself out of there. And that's the concept. He even says that it doesn't matter if you daven quickly. Even if you daven quickly and you just speed through things and you run through things and you don't think about what you're saying, if you put yourself in that world and you prepare yourself to put yourself in that world, then you're there even if you're not concentrating as well as you possibly could. That's the concept of what he says. The Nitziv goes on and he says, and this is what I told you about the when I texted anybody who got the text regarding the dinosaurs. This is going to be a little bit of a doozy. So let's explain this a little bit. It goes the following. The constant rain that rained for 40 days and 40 nights pounded any of the bodies of any of the people or animals that were left on top of the ground. So even those bodies that died from drowning, the constant rain that was pouring down and the water being swished all over, as well as the boiling hot, possibly lava, but at least the very, very hot springs that were coming out from the ground, the combination of everything melted the bodies. Thus, the Pasuk says, as they were going through and the marble was going all over the place, it says, Vayimachu, that everything was erased. Literally, they were just completely taken down from the fact that the rain was going on in the land for 40 days and 40 nights, and that everything was completely destroyed. However, says the Netziv, that was only the bodies on the surface. The Netziv goes on to say, when it says Vayibru Amayim, that it was very, very strong, and it went all over the place, he says that that refers to the entire land changing. The highest mountain at the time mentioned in Parshas Noach was Har Ararat. Har Ararat is a mountain in Turkey. It's nowhere near the size of the Himalayas, nor is it the size of any of the mountains in the Alps, or even in the Appalachian Mountains are bigger than Har Ararat. Says the Netziv, because the whole land changed. HaKadosh Baruch Hu made it so that all the water was pushing everything together so that mountain ranges were formed that never were formed up until that point. Mountain ranges were changed and that high mountains were knocked down to a lower size. When it says it was 15 amos above the highest mountain, the water was 15 amos. It was 15 amos above the highest mountain at the time. But then all of a sudden these other things came up in which these huge mountains formed and stuck up outside of the water from all the crazy amounts of change. There could have been earthquakes, there could have been tsunamis, for all we know, that were happening at the exact same time, that was causing these mountain ranges to change and become something different. Many bodies of the people and the animals that were around at the time were thus covered by dirt, surrounded by the dirt, and buried very, very far down inside. Those bodies that were on top were affected by the heat and immediately melted. Those bodies that weren't on the top, that were all the way down, remained somewhat whole, or however much it was, that they became preserved by the ground, which are the fossils, says the Netziv, that we find nowadays, of creatures. Some of them exist somewhat today, or some of them just have no bearing on what we have today. Tuma problems? No, because the people were, first of all, they would be non-Jewish, and Tumas Ol by Goyim doesn't apply by us nowadays, so it wouldn't apply. And we're not going to touch those bones. The only issue would be Tumas, Maga, but Tumas Maga won't apply because they're so far buried down underneath in the ground. Anyway, there is a Gemara that says that Bavel is where most of the bones went, and most of the bones of the human beings, and that's why it says that the bubble is a tummy land. That is a Gemara. That is a Gemara that says such a thing. But that's true.
It's the creatures anyway. It's not...
No, the creatures wouldn't be a problem, but the people. People would be a problem.
Fossils of people?
Yeah, there would be huge people as well.
Right? Have they found that?
Yeah, for sure. Yes, definitely.
Fossils of people who date back to...
100%. I mean, we don't know what they did back. The problem is, we're not going to go into the carbon dating issue. I'm not going to go into that issue. It's not first. That's a problem.
I mean, they would have had to be bigger enough.
They have found huge bodies. Not huge as in 20 feet, but they have found 9-foot bodies and 8-foot bodies and even 11-foot bodies in certain parts of Sussex, England. But it depends on where you're looking, depends what you're looking for. That's already issues. But forget about that for right now. Just concentrate on what he's going to say. Some say that these bones are all from animals from previous olamos, from worlds that existed and then were destroyed before our world came about. That's a famous line that a lot of people say. And that, therefore, if you see these dinosaurs, they're from years and years and years before our world was created. Millions of years before, and there was. And everything, and Voracious started our world after all those worlds were destroyed. Well, no, there were no people.
No.
That would be the idea.
Yeah.
Now, that's based on a medrash. There is validity to that, as it's based on a medrash. Voracious Rabba, Perek Tes, Halacha Aleph says, Shabara Hashem Olamos Mahrivan. God created worlds and then destroyed them. Specifically, there were 6 worlds that were destroyed before our 7th world. And our 7th world is when Voracious starts, and that refers to what HaKadosh Baruch Hu destroyed everything before. And thus, the animals in there would be with that. The Zohar is also mashma that. The Zohar also mentions that. I didn't see the Zohar inside, but it's quoted that way from the Zohar, that it was a different world beforehand, and then it was changed till afterward. But it's very hard to say, because in Shmos Rabbah, the Medrash says that those worlds that were destroyed became tohu vavohu, meaning null and void, which means there is no existent remnants of that world. They no longer exist today. It says that it's very unlikely that that's the answer, although it could be, because because that's based on the Medrash, it's unlikely that that would explain away everything that we have. So he says, rather, it seems these bones are from the Mabul. These bones that we find from creatures that were combinations of various species that no longer can interbreed today. Let's think of it this way. Now, I'm adding on to the words Minti, but I think this is what would make a little bit more sense in more of a scientific fashion, so to speak. Animals we know today, if they're not very closely related to one another, they cannot interbreed. You cannot interbreed a camel with an elephant. It's absolutely impossible. You can't interbreed a sheep with a lion. Impossible. Even lions and leopards are so far away from one another, they have no ability to interbreed with each other. A camel and a llama, which is in the same family, it took them 83 tries. This is by artificial insemination, not by actual animals, but camels and llamas took 83 tries before they finally were successful to make a combination between a camel and llama. It's not easy to make these types of things. Certain things we know are easy, right? Mules we know are a combination of horses and donkeys. Those are easy. There are such things as wolf, and you should always know that the way to do it is you take the first letters of the male name and the rest of the letters of the female's name. So a wolfin is a male whale and a female dolphin. We know ligers and there are tigons and things like that. You know, they definitely exist. Not only they exist, they're well known. I mean, they have pictures of them all over. You can see them all over the place.
Do they like do that on their own?
No, they won't do it on their own because they don't live together in the same areas. But if they're interbred or if they're artificially inseminated, then it's possible for it to be. However, yes. However, it's impossible.
Are they dolphins?
Yeah, and zorses, like a zebra and a horse and things like that. Yeah. There would be a wolf dolphin.
How about a pair of turtles?
Okay, either way, one other thing that they definitely... So, what was it? It could be the following. Before the world became all corrupt, we all know that the animals, the Pirkei Rabbi Elazar says in Parakhav Gimel Chav Dalet, that the animals were together with the people were together with other, with all the different types of animals, the reptiles and birds and animals, mammals, were all interbreeding within each other. It could be, before HaKadosh Baruch Hu specialized certain creatures, that they had the ability to interbreed. Not only certain animals with one another, but even people with mammals. And a giant, together with certain reptiles, could create a giant reptile. A huge bird, together with another type of reptile, could create these dinosaurs that we see that seem to have feathers, right? Or that have these types of creatures that look somewhat like reptiles, somewhat like birds. You can't know. We have absolutely no idea, but it could be that interbreeding between these species, even though they're so far apart from one another, was possible at the beginning of the world. But then, at the time of the Mabul, what HaKadosh Baruch Hu did was the following. That all these combinations were mamzerim. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't want any of them to exist. So the Teva only consisted of purebred animals. Purebred animals meaning only the animals that were the general type animals that would be able to make it onto the Teva and came out afterward. Those that weren't together with other creatures, yes. And not only that, but even the mamzerim that were born. Rashi doesn't say that, but the mamzerim wouldn't have been led onto the Teva either. A mule wouldn't have made it onto the table. That would be the idea behind it. Any of these others, I'm sorry?
And like what ones there? Was it Buster or Nikkei or was it just...
No, Zohar and Akedah, they could have been either one. Doesn't make a difference. Maybe they were male, maybe they were female, and maybe they had the ability to keep doing it. I have absolutely no idea. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu apparently wanted the following. It would explain the idea behind dinosaurs, that this would be where they all come from. Now, HaKadosh Baruch Hu apparently wanted those bones to remain for future generations to see what they were able to do back then, or what there was back then. Apparently they're needed. But they were hidden from the world for over 3,000 years. Meaning, for 3,000 years from the Mabul on, HaKadosh Baruch Hu put them deep down and up into the earth that no one found these bones, no one realized they were there, they weren't, for all intents and purposes, they had disappeared. And then all of a sudden they reappeared, so to speak, in the 1700s they started finding these bones and realizing, oh my gosh, there were elephants all the way up in Russia. Oh, what are these crazy creatures that look like massive reptiles? All of a sudden they started finding these things. They started looking for them, they started finding them, finding more and more and more and more. Why? It could be that over the period of 3,000 years since 1656 when the Mabul happened, by that time the species had already become specialized to the point where they no longer could interbreed, no longer because they became specialized creatures, they couldn't interbreed with one another, and therefore, the whole idea of creating these huge, massive creatures, these crazy creatures, no longer exists. And that's the idea behind why HaKadosh Baruch Hu would do such a thing. It existed at the time. Those mamzerim happened at the time. They were killed off by the Mabul. It was taken away from the world. It was brought back to the world toward the end for whatever reason that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to bring it back for us in the late 1700s, around that time. And now we know that they weren't erased completely. Only the bodies on top were erased. The bodies in the ground weren't erased. They were erased from the people's minds. But they weren't erased physically. They were left out so that people would see what they had become. That's a crazy concept and a crazy line. Again, I'm not getting into the whole carbon dating issue. That's another issue altogether, and that takes books. That takes books, and that takes a lot of information. I'm not going to get into that. But if you can get around the carbon dating issue, which is possible, if you get around it, it's shayach, that's the ability to think that possibly the dinosaurs came from before the Mabul, and that was what they were. Yeah.
So what's the, so again, to hide, you're saying to hide it for such a long time, and then bring them back only now, but people, it's not obvious where these things came from.
It didn't matter.
You know what I'm saying? So nowadays, meaning the lesson is now that like we're able, to, in some sense, we're able to kind of do this mixed breeding again, right? Is
that no. No. It's impossible now. Now it became impossible. That's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu revealed it to us again. There must be a purpose for them, either for us to have Bechira, to choose between those, you know, those that say this, those that say that, or there are other reasons why those dinosaurs are there, and we just don't know it yet, and we'll see it eventually.
The dinosaurs are bones.
The bones, that's what we're referring to.
Canon debris,
no. Meaning, if you see that there are dinosaurs that were formed from different types of animals, then perhaps we can take those animals and interbreed them again and make new dinosaurs. The answer is we can't. It's too late for that. It's too late. And now it came to the point where even camels and llamas, which are so similar to one another, can't interbreed. For sure, you can't make a reptile together with a bird or a human being with any of these other creatures. There are a couple rias to this. I don't want to. You don't have to go on. But Bechoros Daf Zayin says a very famous line on the top of the Daf. It's one of those famous Gemaras. Hadolfinin, parin v'ravin mibnei adam. Now, dolphinin, we don't know exactly how they're translated. It could be translated as dolphins. I have absolutely no idea. Could be translated as a different type of fish. Could even be a different type of human being, so to speak. I have absolutely no idea. But they have pur revu from human beings. Now, it is absolutely impossible to artificially inseminate a dolphin with human whatever in order to come out with a combination. It doesn't happen. But perhaps that was possible back in the day. Maybe that was possible before the Mabul or right after the Mabul when it still wasn't specialized, and now it became impossible. This is the concept that it would be, and there's a couple other rides, but that's for now. The Me'ash Shiloach asks, why did Noach send an Orev? Why send out a raven first more than anything else, and then send out a Yonah? Where did they come from? So the idea is ravens are a mazon to kas, to anger. As the pasuk says, Livneo Rav Asher Yikro, Chazal tell us that ravens forget about their children and don't feed them enough, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to invite, so to speak, worms to come to the nest so that the raven children don't starve. We don't see that by ravens today, but the ravens have that ability of cruelty. Noah thought anger should not exist in this world. He thought in the new world, after the Teva, the raven should not belong. There should be no anger. What do we have to get angry about? There's no reason to get angry. So he took the raven and threw it out of the Teva and said, we don't need such a creature here. We don't want such a creature, and threw it out from the Teva and said, we want to get rid of it. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu showed him that you still need anger. Why? Because you still have to fight Teva. When you have a crazy desire to do something, a bad desire, like a taiva to do something bad, you can't fight the taiva by saying, like, no, just wait, taiva. It doesn't work. You have to fight with anger. You have to say, no, I'm not going to do it. If you don't have that kas, if you don't have that little bit of anger, it's impossible to get rid of the taiva. Impossible. So we still need kas until when? Till Mashiach comes and there's no more taiva. That's the line, ad yavoshes hamayim. Yavoshes hamayim means until the water is dried up. Water stands for taiva. Ad yavoshes hamayim means until the taivas are all gone. Until those taivas are all dried up, we still need the raven. That's the ad yavoshes hamayim. And when will that happen? Yavoshes are the same letters as Tishbi. For for Eliyahu Hanavi, Atishbi Agiladi. That's the line. When Eliyahu Hanavi comes back, that's when it's going to be around. But that's one. By the way, the Beis HaMikdash also had a concept called the Amo Kalya Orev. This little thing on top of the Beis HaMikdash that had these sharp things that if ravens fell down in them, they would immediately fly back up because it was like almost like a scarecrow that kept the crows off. Amo Kalya Orev is that it's almost time to destroy the Orev and almost time to get rid of the Kas, but not yet time to get rid of it completely. Shoo it away, but don't get rid of them completely. Don't kill the ravens completely. That's the idea.
There's a thing in the CT now.
Oh yeah, 100%. I'm just saying. This is the concept. This is the concept. Genesiv says an unbelievable line. All Sarim had pets back in the day. All Sarim had pets back in the day. Noach was a Sar. He was from a very famous family. Noach's father was Lamech, the son of Methuselah, son of Chanoch. We're talking about some heavy hitters going all the way through. So Noach was a very rich man and a Sar. Says the Netziv, he had pets. His pets were, just like they have nowadays, ravens, in order to get rid of shrutzim in your backyard. That's a Gemara, by the way, in Bava Basra, Daf Chasam and Aleph. The Orev was used as pets, as well as a Yonah. He had pigeons as pets, as passenger pigeons, as carrier pigeons, like it says in the Gemara in Shabbos, Kuf Chav Chasam and Aleph. That's what very rich people used to have. When Noach was told to go on to the Teva, he wasn't just told to go on the Teva by himself. He was told the whole Beischa, in all of your house. Says in Etziv, that includes his pets, any animals that he had in his house. So he not only had himself and his family, his wife and his kids, and his kids' wives, he also brought his pets on. This Orev and the Yonah that he had sent out to go check it out, to go see if the water had dried up, were not the double of the mates. It wasn't the second Orev of the male Orev with the female Orev. It wasn't the male Yonah of the female Yonah. That's not what it was. It was his own pets that were separate, that didn't have a mate on the table. And he sent it out because he knew even if he sent it out and it died, it didn't matter because there were two other ravens on the table. There were two other Yonahs on the table. Or there are actually 14 other Yonahs on the table. These were his own pets. He sent out the Orev because the Orev doesn't fly very far. It just goes right around the table. When he saw that there was no dry land around the Teva, he sent out the Yonah to see how far it could go, because Yonahs go very, very far. Pigeons can fly far away. When the pigeon didn't come back, he realized there was a place for the Yonah to sit, and that's the Raya, says the Netziv, that it wasn't the double, wasn't the mate of a Yonah on the Teva. Because if it did, it just ran away. You just killed the Yonahs. Because all the other Yonahs were supposed to be used for Korbanos. What are you going to do with the two? You still have to have two Yonahs. What are you going to do? That male Yonah ran away. Must be, this is a separate Yonah, another Yonah that was the pet of Noah, and I guess eventually it found its way back to Noah. Eventually it was able to get there. That was a crazy shot. Well, an unbelievable shot.
And then he found the one spot of land, which was Harara at the time.
No, he was on Harara. He found a dry piece of land. We don't know where it was. According to Chazal, the Yonah originally went to Eretz Yisrael, because Eretz Yisrael wasn't as affected by the Mabul as everything else was. I'm sorry, Netziv. We're going to talk to you in Berlin. Which is an unbelievable line.
As far as those go, doesn't that contradict one of the Midrashim that the raven
claimed that you want my wife?
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. That's against that matrix. Yeah, that would be against that matrix. This would be more of a pshat as opposed to a drush. Listen to this. The psukim then go on and speak about the kids of Noach and all of their toldos, including the famous Nimrod. We know about Nimrod. Nimrod obviously being the most rebellious person out there. The Ibn Ezra says an unbelievable line. When it talks about Nimrod, it brings down everything he did, obviously, without, you know, all the different crazy things. I'm just trying to find it right now. B'nei Kush, here we go. In Pasuk Ches, in Perik Yud, Pasuk Ches, the Kush Yelad is Nimrod. Hu heichel lios gibor baris. He started to become the strong man of the land. Hu ya gibor tzayit, he was a strong trapper. Lifnei Hashem, in front of Hashem. Alkeni Omar, therefore it is said, ki nimrod gibor tzayit lifnei Hashem. Like Nimrod, the strong trapper in front of Hashem. That was a catchphrase back then. It's not very catchy now. Who says Ibn Ezra, what's Lifnei Hashem? He was a Gibor Tzayid Lifnei Hashem, a trapper of animals and strong in front of Hashem. What does that mean? What does that mean, Lifnei Hashem? Ibn Ezra, only the Ibn Ezra can say such a thing. He used to bring korbanos, Nimrod. And he brought korbanos of the animals that he trapped and brought them to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. That's Ibn Ezra's line. The Ramban says about that, I thought Nimrod was evil. We all know that Nimrod is called Nimrod. His name is that way. It's a Gemara in Erevin, Nun Gimel. Shehimrid is kol ha'olam alav. He made the entire world rebel against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I mean, we're talking about an evil guy. This guy is bringing korbanos to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? There's no way. Says the Ramban, there's no way such a thing could be. So the Chiddush HaRim gives a mashal. Listen to this mashal. Mashal is to a king who had many officers who worked for him. One officer loved the king very much and he wanted to give him a present for his birthday. But he said, what can I get the king that the king doesn't already have? King has all the money in the world. He's got everything he could possibly want. What can I possibly give the king that he doesn't already have? I'm not rich enough to give him something so expensive. So what can I do? So he decided to bake a beautiful cake. A beautiful cake with everything. He put all of his cocos in it. Everything he had. He spent days on this cake, making it to perfection for his own perfection, the best that he could do. And he made this beautiful, beautiful cake and worked so hard on it and then gave it over to the king. And he said to the king, King, I know I can't afford anything else, but I spent all my time in this. I wanted to show you how much I love you. And here, this is the cake that I spent all my time in. This is my mesiris nefesh. The king, obviously, had no need for cake. He got all the greatest foods that he got from the palace cook. He didn't need anything, and probably the palace cook is cooking anything better than this tzar. But he accepted it gladly, saying, I appreciate the fact that you're willing to be moser nefesh, you're willing to give so much of yourself to me. I appreciate such a cake. The other tzarim saw this exchange, and they were jealous. I said, we can also bake cakes. So they went around, they went back to their house, they baked a bunch of cakes, and they brought it to the king and said, see, king, we can make our own cakes. You should also love us. The king looked at them and said, it's not the same. You didn't give yourself, you didn't put yourself into the cake. It's not the cake that I want. It's the fact that you cared so much to give me the cake. Nimrod brought korbanos, but he brought it because he saw other people bringing korbanos, and they were finding favor in the eyes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And he said, what, you think bringing korbanos is a big deal? I could bring korbanos. And he brought korbanos, but it was on the outside that he brought it. On the inside, he was garbage. On the inside, he didn't want to give it to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And God knew it was a cheap imitation. God knew he was just imitating and doing exactly what the other people were doing. And for that, the Ibn Ezra says, it wasn't a praise. The Ibn Ezra doesn't say this, but the Chiddush HaRim says, it wasn't a praise of Nimrod that he was bringing korbanos. It was a degradation of Nimrod. It was making Nimrod look down upon himself. That you are nothing, Nimrod. There's nothing. You haven't done anything correct. The Paris Yosef gives another idea. Sayyid appears elsewhere in the Chumash by Esav. Ki gibor ki tzayid b'fiv. That he was Tzayid b'fiv, he was a trapper with his mouth. That Esav used to trick people with his mouth. He knew how to trick others and was evil on the inside, says the Paris Yosef. And he showed like he was bringing the korbanos Hashem l'shem, but he was really doing it l'shem avodah zarah. How do we know? Says the Paris Yosef, a tremendous proof. When Eliyahu HaNavi fought the prophets of the Baal at Har HaKarmel, he told the prophets of the Baal, I'll take one animal, you guys will take one animal, whichever one is accepted by God, that's the one that's correct. Me or all of you guys. You guys can do whatever you want. When Eliyahu HaNavi went to go get a cow, the cow ran toward Eliyahu HaNavi to be used as a mizbeach, to be used on the mizbeach of Eliyahu HaNavi, to be used as a korba. But the cow that was supposed to be from the Nevi Abal started running away. Started running away so that the Nevi Abal wouldn't take it. It started planting itself in the ground because it didn't want to make a chilul Hashem. So Eliyahu HaNavi whispered to it, don't worry. There's going to be a Kiddush Hashem through you as well. And when the cow heard that, it started going with the Nevi Abal. Animals can tell if they're being used for the right purpose or they're being used for the wrong purpose, says the Paris Yosef. Since Nimrod was trying to bring korbanos, but he had to trap the animals in order to bring them as korbanos, the animals didn't come to him. He had to trap them in order to get them. Therefore, must be he was faking it, because otherwise the animals would have just come to him. The fact that he was trapping them, he was a gibor tzayid l'fnei Hashem, that means he didn't do it l'shem shemayim. That's the idea. By Avraham Avinu, the isle ran to Avraham Avinu. The Yitzhahara tried to stop it. The Yitzhahara tried to knock it away by getting it caught in all the bushes. But the ram ran to Avraham Avinu to be used as a korban. Yeah.
First of all, the Ammon had that code. So, I mean, how hard is
that? You are correct.
Avraham Avinu had that code. So if you say say, oh, the only reason he was able to have them come here is because of the goat.
You are correct. That was my question, and I'll tell you the final part to this. The Ibn Ezra is not quoting, he's not making up a drush. He's quoting a Sefer HaYashar. I found the Sefer HaYashar, I have it in my house. In the Sefer HaYashar it says explicitly, Nimrod was Makriv Korbanos. And then it seems to say at the end of his life, he went off the derech. It could be that Nimrod was a good guy at first. He was a good person at first, and then he was doing good things, and then he went bad after that. He rebelled later on in life. That's what the Ibn Ezra means. That he was a Gibor Tzayit L'Pnei Hashem in the beginning of his life, and unfortunately he went off later on when he started making the Migdal Bavel and threw Avraham Avinu inside the Kibshon HaEish. That was the concept. It also seems to say similarly in the Targum Yerushalmi and in the Yalkut Ruveni, but I can't tell exactly. I couldn't tell the Aramaic exactly. It says the word Chatol, and I can't tell if Chatol is being used as the lashon of a sin or as a sin offering. I don't know which one it is. I can't tell if it's chet or chatos. I'm not so sure which one it is, but that I think that answers the question. That would answer it. So the Ibn Ezra is really talking, meaning in the beginning he was good, and that's when his makriv korbanos at the end. So that'll answer with the coat. Maybe he got the coat toward the end of his life. We know he got the coat toward the end of his life. He only got it from his father.
Oh, you're a trapper, must mean the animals ran away.
Right, that's another drush that comes from it.
Oh, so
that's another drush.
Different drushes anyway.
Exactly. So maybe you can say either makhluk and midrashim, or it happened at different times.
That's also the mida. Of Cain, isn't that where he would offer not the best? He was offering
whatever it was. Well, that was even more because he knew he was giving it to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so that was better than Nimrod. Nimrod wasn't even mechaven; he wasn't even intending to give it to God. He intended to give it to Avodah Zarah. It just happened to be that he wanted to show people that he was doing it to the God.
He was doing it better by sacrificing actual people.
Who?
If he was actually sacrificing animals for the sake of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Then he thought people, oh, that's a better sacrifice.
No, people. What do you mean people?
Then he sacrificed people until the fire. That was
that's what you mean by that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's you should know. I thought you were about to come out. I have a Medrash Agada that I found. And the Medrash Agada says that Nimrod also trapped people and killed them. But I didn't mean to say that he was a korban. I was like, oh my gosh, where did he get that from? No. That could be true that the Kibshon HaEish was part of that. I don't know, but it doesn't say such a thing. Another Medrash Agada says he was the first person to eat meat. You know that? Strange. Noah was matur to eat meat, but everybody was too scared to kill an animal. So they would either they never ate meat, period, or they would only eat meat if the animal died. And then they would take the dead animal and they would eat that animal, but they would never kill an animal in order to eat from its flesh. Nobody could do such a thing. Nimrod is the first person to trap, kill, and eat an animal. The first person to do such a thing. And that was considered evil. The first person to do such a thing. That's another Medrash Shlema is brought down by the Torah Shlema. I'm sorry? Well, for us, it's like nothing, right? But for them to kill an animal, well, animals are special beings made by a Kadosh Baruch Hu who gives me the right to kill it just so I can have a bit of meat. That was the concept. That was the concept. Like, I'll eat the meat off the ground. For us, we can't do that, obviously, because we have Shchita. We can't eat an Avela. But the non-Jews, they don't have that issue. So they can eat something off the ground. Then it says one good thing that Nimrod started. One good thing that he started, and everyone would agree with it, is that he started the concept of Malchus. He was a Melech. And everybody had to listen to him. That is the Ratzon of Hashem and Kiyum Olam. He was the first Melech in 1900 years of the world that everyone listened to. And if Nimrod said something, everyone got up and did it. Because Omole Mora shall Malchus. Shalmalchus, if you weren't afraid of a government, of a king, each as Re'u Chaim Blo'o, every man would consume their friend. Every man would consume their friend. Victor Miller, I still remember one of the tapes that I heard once, where Victor Miller says, if there was no president, if there was no police, I'd walk by a store, and if I saw something I wanted, I'd break the glass and take it, because I'm not afraid of anyone. That was the line from Victor Miller. So he said that that's the concept. The concept is that anybody could do anything. That's why it's Lifnei Hashem. The Lifnei Hashem is not because of anything he did with Korbanos. Said the Netziv, the Pshat Lifnei Hashem is that just like Nebuchadnezzar is called an Eved of Hashem, he did what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted. Granted, he messed it up. He became a Rasha. Granted, he did that, but he fulfilled a true purpose in this world. And that's why Al Kain Ye'amar. And that's why people said, you have a great idea, but then you messed it up in the end. That's like Nimrod. Nimrod was a Gibor Tzayid Lifnei Hashem. What a tremendous idea, but he messed it up. but he messed it up in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the concept behind it. Okay, the summary over here is that we have the process, the mabul, as well as the remez of the teva, being words, putting yourself in your davening, your learning. Dinosaur bones and erasing the bodies, that was the concept of the dinosaurs. Why send an orev? It was a remez to Kass, or was his pets. That was that. And then Nimrod, we asked, was he really good? It seems he wasn't, but maybe he started off being good and then he went evil later on. In the end, no question he messed up and he became very, very evil, and he did create the concept of Malchus. We'll stop with that. Have a good Shabbos.